Hello, and thank you for tuning in to the second episode of Frost, a Canadian Cold Case Podcast. And I am Ian, the host. We'll be starting the episode by making an announcement. After a vote on social media, we will be changing the format of Frost, and we'll be dropping the province-by-province, season-by-season format. The following podcast episode is intended for mature audiences, and this episode may contain graphic content that may not be acceptable for all ages. For today's episode, we will be going back to October of 1983 and to London, Ontario, for the case of Donna Jean Aucock. So for the case, I will be going through a number of different sources. There is a large number of conflicting reports, but I will be trying to weed through them and bring you the best possible story as I can find. Born March 7th, 1966, Donna Jean Aucock was a 17-year-old high school student who loved children and came from a large family. I believe she had four siblings in the way of three sisters and one brother. On October 13th, 1983, she had agreed to babysit for a neighbor named Michelle Maynard, who lived just a building over in the apartment complex in which her family lived. While there are no reports that anything unusual went on during the babysitting job, the things that started going unusual occurred after 1 a.m. in the morning. This is when Michelle Maynard supposedly met a stranger at the bar she was in, and eventually would ask him for a ride back to her house. Allegedly, during this ride, she would ask the driver if they could stop for pizza, in which she had planned to share with Donna Jean when she got back. As the story goes, she got dropped off and went up to her apartment. She and Donna sat down, shared some pizza, and before Donna went home, Michelle asked that she ran over to the store, a Max Milk nearby, about 180 meters away, and get her some cigarettes. She agreed and left the apartment, walking southbound past her house and to the Max Milk, where she purchased the cigarettes and then left. Later, Donna's father would notice that Donna hadn't returned home after babysitting and sent one of his children to Michelle Maynard's house to send Donna home. It would be here that Michelle Maynard would inform the Aucock family that Donna had left hours earlier on an errand to pick her up some cigarettes, but had not yet returned. Donna's sibling would then return to the family and inform them that Donna appeared to be missing. The police would be soon after contacted, and the family informed that they would have to wait 24 hours to report her missing. Not wanting to waste time, the family quickly went to action and gathered as many people as possible for a search, which would not be successful until a couple of teenagers walked down near the Fanshawe Dam and found a body in the river. The police were quickly contacted by the boys. Later that day, Donna's father would identify the body as that of Donna Jean Aucock. Unfortunately, it had been found that she had been beaten, strangled, and raped with a plastic bag shoved down her throat. This tragedy would be later compounded by a large number of different stories and missteps that would be brought up in the ensuing nearly 37 years. While this case would be brought up in a number of different venues, such as To Catch a Killer, an episode of Unsolved Mysteries, which I cannot seem to be able to find, and Murder in the Family, the podcast, a number of different questions will be raised due to conflicting accounts, mainly from Michelle Maynard herself, who has since allegedly confessed that she lied to police about the components of the composite sketch that the police have been primarily using to try to track down the killer of Donna. Here I'll be going into some of the conflicting stories that I've read, heard, or watched on a variety of different sites. They will be prefaced on my webpage, frostchatter.ca, and possibly even mentioned in the show notes at the end of the episode. That'll depend on which podcast program you are listening to this on, though. So the first part I'll talk about is the individual that Michelle Maynard mentioned that she got a ride from. Well, the key problem for this is there are at least two different stories about how this conversation went on. First, I'll caveat this by saying that I'm not sure which is the official story that was given to the police, as we are not able to actually see the police report. However, one story says that the individual dropped her off and left, but came back later on near to 2 o'clock, knocked on the door, asked to have some of the pizza, and after Michelle told him no and to go away, he left, or at least appeared to leave. The second story is that when she got dropped off, she told the individual that she would be sending the babysitter home and that he could come up afterwards, after she left. This is a pretty big discrepancy, in my opinion at least. Also, if she needed cigarettes that badly, why didn't she just stop for cigarettes on their way home, seeing that there was a convenience store so close to where she lived? This is a kind of a selling point for me on the driver intending on staying for a little while. The convenience store was close enough to walk. If he wasn't planning on staying, then she could have just stopped at the convenience store, gotten the cigarettes, and walked home. One piece of information I wasn't able to find was the difference between time frames between the two, whether she would have had time to actually share the pizza before Donna was seen at the convenience store or not, which would probably lend credence to one of or the other stories. Another thing that bothers me about Michelle's story is that she mentions that later on she went to the store to check on Donna's whereabouts, or if Donna had even arrived, got an answer from the clerk, but didn't buy any cigarettes, which I find a little odd. We'll come back to Michelle's story a little bit later as we talk out other problems. One of the leads that were looked into were how quick the teenagers had found the body and that maybe that they had been involved, but DNA excluded them eventually, as well as the fact that they were actually out walking their dog, and it was their dog that had found the body. So that was one problem that was eliminated quickly. For me, whatever happened had to have happened very quickly, because it was only 160 something odd meters from Michelle Maynard's store to the convenience store. But Donna also had to pass directly by her own house to get there, so she couldn't have been very far from home, a safe spot. So it would have happened between the convenience store and home. It also only takes a couple of minutes for the average person to walk as much as 200 meters. One question, the clerk at the Max store said that he had seen Donna and that she had appeared very upset. So something had happened between Michelle Maynard's front door and the convenience store. She also actually asked to use the phone and they turned her down. After they said no, she left the store and that was the last time she was known to be seen alive. What I believe happened is probably a mixture of the two stories that were given. I believe that he did come back later on for a piece of pizza, but he also knew that the pizza was to be shared between two people and that somebody was going to be leaving. When he got turned back at the door, he sat in his car and waited for the person that was leaving to leave and followed her. Donna being followed by a mysterious man in a car was what got her freaked out and upset at the store, and she was probably going to call home to get a ride or an escort home. The stranger then grabbed her after she left the store and took her away in the vehicle. The problem with following that lead is the key eyewitness to the stranger in the car has allegedly admitted to lying to the police when helping their sketch artists construct the composite drawing that the police have been using for the last 30 plus years. Experts already say that the usefulness of hand-drawn police sketches are helpful in about 9% of the cases that they're used, and digitally drawn sketches are actually less effective than hand-drawn sketches. That effectiveness goes down to about 5%. When somebody's lying to you about the hand-drawn sketches, well, it's useless. The show To Catch a Killer went back and had a look at this case and talked to some of the original people that were in the bar when Michelle was there and worked with them to get a sketch, but I'm not so certain that they would be an accurate sketch. It was done over 30 years later, and you know, dates could be mixed up and faces can begin to bleed into each other after a certain amount of time, so I'm not sure I would be able to believe into a sketch that would come from those circumstances. Not saying they're lying, just it's not really reasonable to believe that somebody would remember a specific face from 30 years ago in what at that time would be probably just a normal run-of-the-mill night to anybody until they found out hours later that somebody had died. Luckily, the evidence that the police were able to collect would eventually yield DNA samples, and they were able to create a DNA profile in which they have tested a number of suspects, including Paul Bernardo and Tennessee fugitive Joe Shepard, both of which were eliminated. Unfortunately, Michelle Maynard has since passed away and has taken whatever else she may have known about the case to the grave. And while she did take a polygraph test during her time on To Catch a Killer and apparently passed it, there is still some beliefs that, due to perceived inaccuracies with polygraph tests, that she may still have been hiding facts about the case that she hadn't given to the police or to the family. In the end, I do think that this is a solvable case. The OPP, or the Ontario Provincial Police, does have a DNA profile on the killer, and they do continue to investigate it to this day, including any leads that come up. If you happen to know anything about the case, please call the OPP or the Crime Stoppers. There is a $50,000 reward being offered for information that leads to an arrest and conviction of the killer. I would especially like to thank Tammy Danette for her assistance in preparing me for this podcast, and wish her and her family all the best. And for more information, invite you to check out the Justice for Donna Jean Aucock Facebook group. Thank you. Now for our more lighthearted segment of the podcast that I have also slightly renamed to Interesting Historical Canadian Crime. And for this week's crime, I have chosen what has been dubbed the Great Canadian Syrup Heist. Yes, really, you can't get much more Canadian than this. So for the victim, we have the Federation of Quebec Maple Syrup Producers. And when you hear the words, the Canadian Reserve of Maple Syrup, these are the guys that I'm referring to. The producers represent 77% of the global maple syrup supply. So this crime actually took place over the course of several months between 2011 and 2012. Where nearly 10,000 barrels of maple syrup was stolen in a suspected insider job from the FPAQ facility in Saint-Louis-de-Blandford, Quebec. For any French listeners, I do apologize. I do not speak French, so I may have just slaughtered that name. But according to reports, the syrup was stored in unmarked white metal barrels and was only inspected once a year. So the thieves used trucks to transport barrels to a remote sugar shack, where they siphoned off the maple syrup, refilled the barrels with water, and returned them to the facility. Eventually got to the point where the thieves didn't even bother refilling. They just started siphoning the syrup directly off the barrels in the reserve
and would just transport them in small batches across the border into Vermont, selling them to legitimate business people. Although reports are a little light on how the men were caught, there were 17 people eventually caught and charged. When adjusted for inflation, this heist, at the time worth about $18.7 million, is still the most valuable heist in Canadian history. So there you go, the most Canadian crime you can think of, probably. So now we come to the end of another podcast episode. I'd like to thank you guys for sticking it out with me and continuing to stick with me while I learn the ropes. I hope the quality of this episode was a little bit better than the past two, and I hope to make each one a little bit better as I go. I have two shoutouts for podcasts for you today. The first one is for The Dark Poutine, a great Canadian podcast out of the west coast of Canada by Mike and Scott. Totally worth checking out. They don't just cover true crime, but the dark history of Canada as well. The second podcast is called Eat Crime, but I'll let them tell you about it themselves.
Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Caitlin.
And we're the hosts of Eat Crime, a podcast full of delicious mysteries.
You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Eat Crime and on Facebook, Eat Crime Pod.
Here's a few examples of what you'll hear.
Laurencia Ann Bambi Bembenak.
Do what now?
And he had like secretly taken that copy. I don't know why.
Well, I know why.
To murder her?
To murder her.
And I was like, I can't imagine a mom naming their kids Dante.
We're not in a satanic cult. So.
Yes, I don't know. Let's make that abundantly clear.
She seems like she... Provocativity? Is that a word?
She provocativity? Which, I mean, what a businessman.
I know. Yeah, that's what I'm
murdered
saying.
People like, and got paid for it.
It's both true that there is a Conjuring 2, and Conjuring 2 is true. Valerie, get out of here.
Thanks, ladies, for supporting us here at Frost, and wish you all the best in the new year. I'd just like to remind everybody that we have a Facebook group called Frost, as well as a webpage called frostchatter.ca. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram, or send me an email at thelazysherlock@hotmail.com. I am accepting suggestions for new cases, and unlike how it was before, we will be accepting suggestions from all across Canada. Also, as I am just learning the ropes for podcasting, I do welcome criticism, so please feel free to send me suggestions on how I can do better, and advice. I appreciate it, and thank you ahead of time. I hope that you will tune in next week for another episode, and I hope you have a great week and weekend. Thank you. Thank you.